Blog Talk Radio.
My weird can talk in a special way. There are some things they help me say. Hello, come here, is it okay? Nice to meet you, how are you today?
Welcome to WeHands Radio. Learn to connect with your baby, toddler, and preschool child. I'm your host, Sarah Bingham.
Hi, everybody. Yes, it is Sarah Bingham. I am the founder of WeHands and the author of the Baby Signing Book. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our baby sign language classes and products teach parents to connect with their young children, and we are honored that we get to use this wee little podcast to connect you with wonderful parenting experts from across the country and beyond. Children with autism have unique behavior issues. Parents of children with an autism spectrum disorder find their needs differ dramatically from children who are typically developing. And many of these parents find discipline and behavior the biggest challenge of all. Today, I have the pleasure of chatting with Samantha Carey, who holds a master's in applied disability studies and is certified with the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, or BCBA. Samantha works as a behavior consultant at Morneau Chappelle's Children's Support Solutions, and today we'll be talking about a range of things regarding challenging behaviors. We'll talk about applied behavior analysis, autism, and behavior challenges. Thank you so much for joining us, Samantha. Welcome to our wee little show.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah. I'm really excited to be on your show today.
I am excited as well because I love behavior and its connection with communication. So I'm so glad that we're able to get you on the show today.
Me too. I'm very excited about it.
Yay! It's such an important topic, and I don't think people realize how important it is. So we're going to chat about all the work that you do, the wonderful work that you do at Children's Support Solutions. Okay, let's back up a little bit though, because we're talking about children. Can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what you were like as a child?
Sure. I actually grew up in Thornhill. I've lived there most of my life. It's just a little city in the GTA, or a little suburb, I guess, in the GTA just above Toronto and above North York. And what I was like as a child, I was the obedient child. I was the one who listened to what my parents said, and I tried my best to always be very well behaved, which is sometimes a stark contrast from my sisters. So I think it's always like that when you have siblings, right? Very, very, very different from each other sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. But that's really interesting that you were the behaved one.
I was. I tried my best to always be very well behaved and always listen to my mom and dad. So I guess that was mostly me as a child.
Of course, I haven't talked with your sisters or your mother and father, so I'm just going to take you at your word for that. Now, in doing what you do now, I worked for a very small time as a behavior therapist, so I'm really interested to see how you introduce yourself so outside of the work context. So if you were introduced at a neighborhood party, how would you describe what you do?
I typically say, and I get this question a lot because I don't think there's a really good understanding of what behavior analysis actually is and what does a behavior consultant actually do. So what I tend to say is I work primarily with children who have been diagnosed with autism, and I work on changing behaviors, whether it's actually teaching the child to actually learn new behaviors and more appropriate behaviors, or skill-building behaviors, or reducing really problematic behaviors. So that tends to be my explanation of what I do, is basically I work to change behavior. I work primarily with children and usually those diagnosed with autism.
Okay, very, very good. How long have you been doing that, what you've been doing?
So within Morneau Chappelle, I haven't been here for that long. It's actually been, I believe, 2 or 3 months, so it hasn't been that long. Working with children with who have been diagnosed with various disabilities, it's been quite a long time. I actually started when I was 13, working in a Hebrew school, working with children who had been diagnosed with different learning challenges. And from there, I went on to do a co-op placement in high school in an autism class in a local elementary school. From there, I did co-op work terms in my undergraduate placement, where I actually did ABA. I worked one-to-one with clients at camp who were diagnosed usually with, I dealt with some clients who were diagnosed with autism, some who were diagnosed with Down syndrome, a whole variety of different things. I also worked in two group homes, one with teenagers and one with adults. And then more recently, more working so with children in ABA environments.
Wow, that is a lot.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while.
And welcome to Children's Support Solutions. That's fantastic.
Oh,
your very background is amazing. Go ahead.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, you know what, it's really fun to know what you want to do at a very young age. And I think I kind of always knew I wanted to work with children and children diagnosed with various disabilities. So it's just a matter of finding exactly where I was going to fit in. And back when I first started many years ago, I actually didn't know the field of ABA existed. So I think it was just finding my way very slowly to that part of behavior analysis and actually understanding kind of how to implement those strategies and learning a little bit about that. And that brought me to where I am today.
Fantastic. Let's go back a little bit again, and I can hear little voices behind you, and I absolutely love them. what if you define applied, first of all, let's define autism for our audience, and then define applied behavior analysis.
Okay, so to start with autism, there is a whole spectrum of autism. So autism does not just refer to one specific child. It refers to a whole range of different abilities and areas for improvement. But typically it's a disorder, and when we talk about the characteristics, we're talking about issues typically with social interaction as well as communication, and there's also some issues with restrictive and repetitive behavior, so kids who like to line up cars in a very specific way, or who like to engage in the same behavior with certain items over and over and over again. So it's usually those three items, so restricted social interaction, so ability to interact with others, issues in terms of communication, deficits in communication, as well as restricted or repetitive interests.
Okay, those are perfect, and I'll flag those red flags and share them with everybody on Twitter and our Facebook page. And then applied behavior analysis.
So when we talk about applied it's okay. I was going to say applied behavior analysis, what we're talking about is we're talking about principles and techniques, I guess, as well as strategies that are used to change socially significant behaviors. So I know that sounds very, very vague, but that usually is a definition that tends to come into play. So the main pieces here, we're talking about the application for socially significant behaviors. So not behaviors that a parent really doesn't like when a child picks his nose. If that's a socially significant behavior and actually impedes learning or another part of this child's life, then that might be something we interact with and actually try to change. But if it's just working for the parents and that's the only thing and they're the only person who's really affected by it, that might not be something they would change. So really looking at socially significant behaviors and using the science and the skills and the strategies of applied behavior analysis. The other piece of it is that all decisions are based in data. So we don't say, okay, I see this behavior and this is the plan that I'm going to put into place without any sort of an assessment. So all of applied behavior analysis focuses on the use of data to make informed clinical decisions. So that's a really important piece, is the data collection and actually making decisions based on the data.
I love that. And I love the data component of it so that you can track success, whether it's very small or large, you can see what's happening and what is affecting that. And I love that aspect of behavior therapy.
It makes it, you know what, it's very interesting. We're very similar to the sciences. We are considered to be a science, a field of applied behavior analysis. But unfortunately, it's not viewed that way for a lot of people who really don't have a lot of the background information on where applied behavior analysis came from. And that's really the science piece of it really links us back to the other applied sciences. And we are very similar, and our decisions are made based in the data.
I love data. And anybody who's worked with me knows that I do that, and some of my students have not appreciated the fact that I love data. But it's such an important part, especially if you're working in a team setting, so that you can share all the information about what's going on with the other team members. It's so vitally important.
It most definitely is, and that's the easiest way to communicate information, right, is through the data. We have hard information that tells us exactly what's happening on a moment-to-moment basis, and that's so important. I can't emphasize that part enough.
I love it. Two minds. Wonderful. Now, we're talking about behavior challenges. So why is autism associated with behavior challenges?
So it's difficult. I guess the best way to look at this is we can actually just talk about challenging behavior in general, so not even specific to children who are diagnosed with autism, because I do work with children who sometimes don't have a diagnosis or sometimes have a different sort of a diagnosis that may not necessarily be autism. When we talk about challenging behaviors, the important thing to understand is the behavior allows this individual to actually access something. And this is something I say a lot of the time to the BT team here at CSS Toronto, is when we talk about behavior, we need to figure out what is the individual getting when they engage in this behavior. So if this individual is very aggressive towards others, so I have a child who likes to hit his peers. What I really need to understand is what happens when he hits his peers? What is he getting out of this experience that makes this behavior valuable? So challenging behaviors, an easier way to understand them, because I find we tend to make them really complicated and convoluted. Really, at the bottom, very, very basic level, we need to understand what is this behavior allowing this person to access. So if I watch this individual engage in this behavior, I'm watching him hit his peers, I'm watching him hit his peers, and I'm taking some data, and what I start to see is a pattern. I'm seeing he only hits his peers when they take toys away from him. Oh, so now it starts to make a little bit more sense. So he's engaging in this challenging behavior to get his item back from his peers because they're taking away these items that he enjoys playing with. Okay, so now what I need to figure out is what is an alternative behavior that I can teach him, and how do I make this so this behavior is no longer useful? So when he hits his peers, they're no longer giving back the item that they had taken away from him. Does that make sense?
It makes absolutely sense, and I'm doing a little happy dance because I love it.
You know, it really simplifies things in a lot of ways when we say, oh, my child just keeps engaging in this X problematic behavior over and over and over again. We really need to break it down. I think this is a really important piece for parents and caregivers, as well as individuals who work and utilize applied behavior analysis strategies, as well as people from other disciplines and professionals from other disciplines, to really understand we're looking at the reason why this person is engaging in this behavior. What are they getting out of it? There's always something, so it's just a matter of figuring out what it is and then making changes to our behavior accordingly.
Yeah, and I've always shared with parents, especially when I'm talking about toddlers and the terrible twos, and I don't really like that phrase, that behaviors are because they want to get something, they want your attention, it's maybe for a sensory reason, or they want to escape a situation. And I've seen so many toddlers that when you teach them the sign for all done because they want to escape, some of those behaviors that you may see in the grocery store go away because they're replaced with a little one who's just tired and is signing all done and he wants to go to his bed.
That's a fantastic replacement behavior, that functional communication strategy. That's one that we use quite often in terms of trying to teach an appropriate alternative communicative strategy to replace that problematic behavior.
There's such a link between behavior and communication. Who are some of the people that you work with? Who are the teams, the therapy teams that you're working with? Who can help regarding behaviors? And so who are the folks that you've teamed up with?
That's a great question. So in terms of the team who works with most of our clients one-to-one, their job title is as an instructor therapist. So they are responsible for providing the ongoing therapy for our clients who are in service. There's also individuals like myself, who's a behavior consultant, and senior therapists who are responsible for overseeing the implementation of the IBI, the intensive behavior intervention that we are providing for our clients. We also work with occupational therapists, speech-language pathologists, physiotherapists, and psychologists, depending on the services that each client requires. So a lot of our clients do engage multiple services because there are deficits in things like communication, or there are significant sensory needs where we need to call in an occupational therapist. So we do work as a multidisciplinary approach. We also work a lot within our own team, both one-to-one with the child as well as overseeing each child's programming and making changes accordingly to make sure that they're progressing well and actually learning the skills that we're trying to teach them.
That's a whole team of kids, team of therapists working for the kids. That's fantastic. And I know My training, I am officially a communicative disorder assistant, and I've definitely worked with speech-language pathologists, but having worked with so many behavior therapists and occupational therapists, you learn so much from listening to and watching and just absorbing what all of these other professions learn and can share. It's just a wonderful place to be as a therapist.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is, and it's very educational. Every single day there's something new to be learned, right? It's a wonderful thing to work as a multidisciplinary approach because you do actually experience that different perspective in terms of actually looking at the behavior and looking at the individual and learning a lot about what can be done with them and what kind of strategies might be successful.
Yeah, you learn so many things from the different and varied therapists that you work with, and then you're all working with so many different kids because you do work, all kids are different, and you learn a little bit from each one of them.
That's exactly it.
What are some of the, in the work that you've done, what are some of the positive things that you, positive strategies for supporting behavior?
So, you know, it's a difficult thing to answer just because it really depends on the child. It depends on the behavior we're seeing. I would say on a very simplistic level, I think following through. So when you ask a child to do something, making sure you actually follow through and have them do it, even if they are flopping on the floor or trying their hardest to get out of it, we want to make sure that we are following through, because when we choose not to follow through or when it's easier not to, we teach the child that if you engage in said behavior, you don't actually have to do the things I'm asking you to do. So I think that that's one of the big ones that we see a lot, especially with families, because there are other children in the household sometimes, there are other responsibilities, and sometimes it's easy to forget that kind of golden rule of if you ask someone to do something, you need to teach them that the expectation is there, that they actually do the thing that you're asking them to do. So I think that's probably one of the most basic strategies, and I mentioned to a lot of families and a lot of parents when I speak to them, is really that rule of following through. So I would say probably that's one of the more important ones.
I agree, and I also agree as a parent it's one of the hardest ones to do. But it's very effective. I know even with my own kids, I remembered my daughter when she was 6 years old and she had a friend over and they were trying to, I could hear them whispering and they were being very quiet, which is very scary sometimes as a parent. And I could get the sense that this friend was trying to get my daughter to convince me to let them do something. And I can remember Sabrina saying to this little girl, she said, "You know what? My mom doesn't negotiate."
I like that. That sounds great.
I had a little yes there, very quietly. But it is. I mean, being consistent is the most important thing. But again, it's very hard. And I also want to let parents know that it's okay. Every once in a while, if you mess up, because you will, nobody is 100%. And we talked about data before. And whenever we're taking data as a therapist, we try not to shoot for 100% because we're never going to get there. And we try for like 80 and 90%. That's totally fine. And as parents, we have to allow ourselves that as well. We're not perfect all the time.
100%. And you know what, as I don't have children of my own, so I'm not quite there yet, but at some point in the future, and find as I've spent more time in the field, I'm starting to understand more and more what does everyday life look like, and trying to picture if I was in this parent's shoes, what would be acceptable in terms of what can I actually do today? And am I asking unrealistic things of the parents that I work with? And I do my best, and I found over time I'm starting to be much more realistic with the families I work with and actually say, you know what, I know this isn't possible all the time, but let's try a little bit. And I find that that's actually much more successful for a lot of the families that I work with.
And you know what? Because you're working with a team, you're going to be working with so many people who are parents and have other experience. Mm-hmm. And again, it comes to that. You learn from everybody that you're working with.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I gain a lot from, I actually have some instructor therapists who are parents already, which is fantastic. So we do. We learn a lot from each other. It's an amazing sense of community, which is fantastic.
And it's also you learn from other parents because some of them have great tricks.
Yeah. You know what? I definitely do. I find my meetings with parents are so successful and I gain so much from my discussions with them. And I'm able to apply some of that information to other clients that I work with, which is phenomenal.
That's fantastic. What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned so far in doing what you do and the work that you do with Children's Support Solutions?
I would say the biggest lesson that I've learned is, and I guess this is something I've learned many years ago, but I emphasize that every time I started a new placement, every time I start somewhere new and start my career at a new organization, is that every child is very different. And I see this with every client I work with, that they're all so very different, and we can never do a kind of a cookie-cutter approach to actually working with these clients and programming for them, because every child is so unique. Every child needs their own individualized programming and own individualized support system to actually appropriately target the things that they need to learn. So I think that that's a big one, and it's a lesson that I learn over and over and over again with every new employment opportunity, with every new client that I work with. They are all so very different, and even the diagnosis of autism does not make them similar in a lot of ways. In fact, it emphasizes their differences even more.
I think Temple Grandin has a quote. What is it? She says, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that one before, and she's 100% correct, and that's exactly it, and it's something that's emphasized every day in the work that I do, that every single client I work with and is very, very different, and the diagnosis doesn't necessarily make them similar in any measurable way, with the exception of they have these commonalities with regards to symptoms that allowed them to be diagnosed to begin with. But beyond that, the way that they engage in certain behaviors, the way that they learn is completely different. And that's why we have to be so individualized in terms of programming and in terms of actually planning with them.
I agree, absolutely. A lot of times we're especially with WeHAMS classes, our classes for babies and toddlers, do you have a key piece of advice for brand new parents, or to, because we talk about the terrible twos a lot, for new parents? What advice would you give new parents in a nutshell?
You know what? I was going to say it's actually a tricky one, because I don't work with a lot of very, very young clients. A lot of my clients are 2 and up, so I don't see a lot of brand new parents. But I would say definitely cherishing every moment of the time that you have with your children. They're only little for so long, and then you seem to grow up very fast. With regards to behavior, you know what? Every parent just needs to do their best, and your best is going to be what it'll be, and that's perfect for you, and it's perfect for your family if that's what they need. So it's just being cognizant of every family is different, every child is different, and whatever you're doing, if it works for your family, that's great.
I love it. Whatever you are doing works for them. I'm just writing that down, and I'm going to tweet it out. You've been doing this for such a long time, and I can hear it in your voice that you're so incredibly passionate about what you're doing. What keeps you interested in what you're doing?
I think just being able to come to work and knowing that I'm actually contributing to teaching the clients that I work with something new, whether it's a program that I've written that helps them learn a new skill. So my client learned how to write letters, let's say. That's fantastic, just in terms of they didn't have the skill, and now because of the work that I've done, I've helped to contribute to them learning that skill. It's just amazing, and I think that every program that I write and every behavior protocol that I implement that helps to decrease a behavior, every program that I write that helps to increase an appropriate socially significant behavior is just, I think that's what keeps me coming back day after day. I love it.
You have your own little data sheet for the wonderful work that you're doing.
It's in all of my graphs.
You are reinforced by the work that you
exactly.
do.
Exactly. Exactly. It's perfect.
This is a behavior 101 lesson right there. In all of your studies as well, do you have a favorite parenting book that you love, and why do you love it?
You know, mine's a little bit different, actually. It's not really related to, I guess it is related to behavior, but not behavior analysis per se. My favorite parenting book is called Have You Filled a Bucket Today? And it's a guide to the daily happiness for children. And I love it. I had a parent show it to me many years ago, and it sticks in my mind as one of my favorite parenting books. It's about teaching children how to give to others rather than just themselves. And I think it's just such a powerful book in terms of actually teaching that lesson. When kids are exposed in so many ways to being interested in themselves and how do I get what I need. This book is about how do you give to others and how do you contribute and give back to society in a meaningful way. And society can mean just one person. It can mean a whole bunch of people, but it's really looking at it from a perspective of giving and less taking. And I think it's phenomenal.
That is fantastic. I know. I mean, I get such pleasure out of doing this little podcast with so many different parenting experts. And we talk about learning from the different therapists that you're working with. And I've just learned from you. I've never heard of this book, but I've just done a quick Google and it looks so wonderful. It's Have You Filled a Bucket Today? A Guide to Daily Happiness for Kids. And it's by Carol McLeod and illustrated by David Messing. I love this. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It's a fantastic read. And I'd never heard of it before. I don't even remember. It was a parent of a client I used to work with many years ago. And they had brought it in. And I remember looking at it and thinking, how fantastic is this? I've never seen anything like this before. And it really is such a lovely story to share with children.
My goodness, I'm going to add it to our list and share it with our instructors. And I'm pretty sure my niece and nephew may get it for whatever holiday is coming up next. Thank you. That's fantastic.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be able to share.
Oh my goodness, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for hanging out with me, Samantha.
No problem. I'm happy to. And thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it was just lovely. Everybody, I'm just so happy that we've been able to chat with Samantha today. And we're just about out of time. But today I had the pleasure of chatting with Samantha Carey, a behavior consultant at Morneau Chappelle's Children's Support Solutions. And she shared so much. I'm so excited. I spoke with Samantha from her office in the clinic in Toronto. And right now we're just about out of time. I need to go do some shopping on Amazon and look up that book. But I want to thank you for joining us. Since 2001, WeHands has been a leading children's sign language and language development program delivered through fun and interactive classes. And in 2014, WeHands became a part of Morneau Chappelle's Children's Support Solutions. That's an organization that provides health-centered and educational services to children with differences to help them reach their potential. And Samantha is part of that team. You can find out more about Children's Support Solutions on the website, childrenssupportsolutions.morneauchappelle.com, and you can connect with WeHands on Twitter. That's me. We are at WeHands. Our website is WeHands.com if you'd like to find some baby sign language classes in your area, and you can email me with any questions you have. Just email info@WeHands.com. Until next time, I'm Sarah Bingham, WeHands founder and author of the Baby Signing Book.